This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Sarah and I have talked many times about our desire to age as gracefully as possible, and skincare is a huge piece of that. I spend a lot of time and money thinking about my skin, and I have added Ritual to my routine, which just gives me a lot of comfort. Ritual is here for us. They have created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted clinical studies, so we know it's working. They're taking the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual Hyacera is one of several Ritual products that I love. I take the daily multivitamin, I take a probiotic, and Hyacera is that once daily skincare supplement that is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. I recently met a friend for the first time in person as opposed to online, and we were discussing the fact that I am 43, and she said, "I cannot believe how young you look." And I thought, thank you, Ritual, for that. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off.
Your iTunes reviews help Pantsuit Politics move up the rankings, which spreads our love of nuance far and wide. Plus, being called the Oprahs of nuance made my life. So please take a few minutes and leave a review by searching Pantsuit Politics in the podcast app and clicking the Reviews tab. This week was, by 2017 standards, a little calmer.
So we're taking a breath and diving into some of your feedback on this episode of The Briefcase.
This is Sarah from the left.
And Beth from the right.
You're listening to Pantsuit Politics.
No shouting, no insults, plenty of nuance.
And we're back.
We are back. We're digesting some of what's happened this week, which has been a lot, but like nothing compared to the first couple weeks of the year.
Well, I think because there's a lot, but it doesn't seem as earth-shattering, which is helpful.
I think that's mostly true. I do think there are people who have had an earth-shattering week in some ways.
That's true.
That's probably always going to be true. But on the whole, at least we haven't seen, I don't even know what to say, honestly. I think I'm just trying to make myself feel better. Are we just getting numb? Is that what it is?
No, H.R. McMaster makes me feel better.
That is a great choice.
So he seems like an intellectual. So wait, well, let's back up. Donald Trump has nominated he's a general, right? No. It's further down. He's got a lower ranking.
Lieutenant general, I think. Is that
Listen,
right?
Listen, I'm not good at those things, okay? I'm just going to put my lack of the ranking system and all that. It's not my wheelhouse, okay? But he is, from all accounts, an intellectual and a strategist and a very smart, careful thinker. And let's be real. We could use some more smart, careful thinkers in the Trump White House, as far as I'm concerned.
Also fiercely independent by all accounts, like someone who is not at all a yes man and who requires his position to have lots of autonomy.
Well, and so it's I don't know how that's going to go. Like, I don't
it doesn't sound like this dude is going to suffer fools, and particularly fools of the Steve Bannon flavor. So from what I'm reading, it's unclear whether he'll remain on the National Security Council, right? Have you read the same thing?
I have. It's interesting. I mean, I'm willing to watch this play out, right? Because I think there is so much hope in having someone who's a true professional like this in that post. So hopefully good things will come of H.R. McMaster.
Well, and what I think is really interesting is as he's come on and we're hearing reports that he's independent and he's really sort of trying to make his way, simultaneously to today, we're recording on Thursday, there's been all these reports that Secretary of State, oh my gosh, I blanked on his name.
Rex Tillerson.
Thank you. It's like it's a sort of a movie name, I think, movie villain name. Anyway, he is being shut off, pushed out, not being allowed to pick his own deputy, not being allowed to do public appearances. In the past, the State Department has taken this sort of primary role with regards to foreign policy. It doesn't look to be that it's going to maintain that way.
I'm wondering how long Rex Tillerson's going to hang for that. He doesn't strike me as someone who just wants to be trotted out for the occasional appearance.
But it's like, you know, this is the problem, though. When you pick someone without experience in the, government, but specifically the Secretary or the State Department, like, he doesn't know what levers to pull. He doesn't understand the organization well enough to know how to position himself or maneuver within these new Trump guidelines. I feel like somebody better versed in the department itself would have more options.
I don't know. I think it's hard to know what the source of this seeming isolation is. I just wonder if he might also be relatively independent and that it's not sitting well with some of the people closest to Donald Trump. You hate to even speculate, right? Because who knows? I do think that in the few public appearances he's made, Rex Tillerson has seemed fairly well-informed, fairly level-headed. So I hope that he is ultimately a force for good in this administration, but he just doesn't seem like much of a force at all right now.
Speaking of well-reasoned and well-informed, those town halls are going swimmingly, huh?
I have been thinking a lot about this because Jane has walked into my bedroom in the mornings when I've had the news on and there's all this crazy footage from town halls. And I've been trying to find a way to say to her, civic engagement, good. Yelling at each other, bad. Right? there's a way to do this.
Well, I was watching the video this morning from Senator Tom Cotton's town hall in Arkansas. And it was really interesting because I was listening to the Vox podcast, The Weeds. Sarah Cliff came to our beloved home state of Kentucky and did some reporting on Obamacare. And Kentucky is interesting because the traditional knowledge has been you give benefits, they become entrenched, and they become popular, and they're very hard to touch. Particularly in Kentucky, which absolutely benefited the most from Obamacare. And you have sort of the opposite thing happening. Didn't make Obama popular. Our Democratic governor who instituted this change lost to a Republican governor who promised to take these benefits away. Kentucky went overwhelmingly for Trump, but she would interview these people and they would say, well, he doesn't mean it. He's not going to actually take it away. And it's not perfect anyway, so maybe he'll fix it because our costs are so high and the cost of healthcare is still so high and all these problems haven't been fixed. Particularly, I think the idea was that with Medicare expansion, wait, is it Medicare or Medicaid expansion? I always get the two confused.
I think it's Medicaid, but I'm not positive.
Well, we'll just call it the expansion. With the expansion, I think that wrote that into law thinking that would be sort of the less good option. And what's turned out is that people are much happier with the coverage under the expansion, and to the point where she was interviewing people who were like, I didn't want to take a raise because then I would not qualify for the expanded coverage and I'd have to go to the marketplace and it would cost me much more, which is the exact opposite of what particularly the Republican Party says it wants, people not being motivated to work. But they were the ones who pushed for this and pushed for the marketplace because they thought it would be better. But really what we're finding in rural states like Kentucky is there's just not enough competition, even really beyond rural states, to make the marketplace really produce those lower prices that we were hoping to see. But anyway, so you have these people who love their Obamacare but hate Obama and Democrats and voted for Donald Trump, saying he was promising to take it away. But I mean, I think what you're seeing at these town halls, you know, to go around to get to where I started, is, you know, I think you are going to see a dramatic shift from the Republican Party on this, because these are red states with people livid that you might take their health insurance coverage away. And hey, for good reason.
I think people are partially so livid because it's becoming so abundantly clear that there is no plan.
I don't think people are mad because there's no plan. They're mad because you're going to take their plan away. I mean, I guess you do hear people saying, if you can think of something better, that's fine. What are you going to do? But man, that woman in Arkansas where she was like, what coverage do you have? And the whole place erupted. What I think is so interesting is there's so, you know, for people who focus on politics, there's so many things that are sort of controversial about the Trump presidencies. But these town halls seem to be focused on Obamacare.
Well, it's the most personal thing to any of us, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it is that there's no plan, because if you're hearing they're just going to repeal this and then what?
Well,
that is
true.
Scary. I mean, that's really scary. Here's the thing. I don't know why anybody ever thought that the Affordable Care Act was going to bring prices down, because it has nothing to do with the cost of health care. It's just making sure more people are insured, and that's a good thing.
Well, I disagree, though. There's all kinds of long-term requirements and proposals that do, you know, the idea that you are going to reward doctors for preventive care and pay for preventive care. And I think that is, there are measures within Obamacare that are attempting to drive down the cost of healthcare. The problem is that that's a big ask, and it's going to take a while. And I think people wanted immediate results, which was unrealistic.
It's a really long play. It depends on compliance by everybody, right? You have to go take advantage of those wellness visits. And some of those wellness incentives are a mixed bag, right? Because then you get people getting unnecessary care on the preventive side because it's, in their minds, free, even though it's not free, right? So it's not that I disagree wholesale with the Affordable Care Act. We've talked about this before. I think saying that you're just against ACA is like saying you're against the woods. Like, there's so much in it. There are some good ideas in there. I like the exchanges. I think that's a good approach. I just also think that we still haven't done anything about the price of actual pharmaceuticals and healthcare services and healthcare equipment. And until we do that, our insurance is going to keep getting more and more expensive. So anything that the Republicans do, in my view, that doesn't address the rising cost of healthcare is still a failure.
And I don't understand, you know, I don't think the idea that we're just going to give people subsidies or let them use their HSA. I mean, the people at these town halls that are livid don't have money to put in an HSA. Come on, guys. They don't have that money. So most of the proposals coming out of the Republican Party, including from Rand Paul, are going to help the upper middle class and the upper income people. There's no addressing the people that are, I think, for the most part at these town halls, you know, low income people who did not have health insurance and do now and don't want to see it go anywhere.
The situation with the Affordable Care Act is this, in my view. What Democrats did was take a step towards single payer knowingly. The system that has been set up under the Affordable Care Act is wholly unsustainable as an economic proposition unless you use it as the first building block on a path towards single payer.
I mean, I don't have any problem with single payer. I think your employer being in charge of your health care and then able to have a stake in healthcare decisions like your reproduction is bananas, and we should stop doing that. But that's just me.
Well, so then my fear about single payer is then now we're going to have like the whole country fighting about your reproductive rights, and that's going to make it even worse. But putting that aside, whether single payer is good or bad, that's what ACA is, right? It's the first step on that road. And Republicans are in the horrendous position now of taking away something that's been given in order to try to fix it and make it economically sustainable if they don't want to go down the single payer path. So politically, this thing boxes Republicans into a corner that I don't know how they get out of unless they're all willing to not go back to Congress.
I think that might be happening no matter what. I mean, I'm sorry. I know it makes me a bad person and it's not particularly nuanced, but I've got some real schadenfreude right now because, I mean, you had Democratic Congress people being, they were getting spit on in town halls when Obamacare was getting passed. And so, you know, it's just, maybe I won't be, I'm not celebratory, but I do think this proves Harry Enten's point after the after the election last year, which is all politics cyclical. And anybody who was cackling with glee as Democrats got pounded in town halls with the passage of Obamacare is now eating their words with Republicans getting pounded in town halls at the idea of taking away Obamacare. And I don't, you know, they're not total. The town hall, the whole focus of town halls is not Obamacare, but I am sort of surprised as how that is a sustained focus and sustained thing people keep bringing up.
And it is hard to know how much of it, you know, that's certainly the volume of the coverage. What's really going on? I don't know. I think that every morning as I see people yelling on television, like, well, this is the interesting highlight that made the media coverage. What else are people out there saying in a less dramatic way, you know,
well,
that
I've
we're
seen,
not
we've
getting
had
here.
We've had listeners email us and say, like, hey, this was the coverage of the town hall, but I was there, or friends of mine were there, and that's not what it was like. And a regular listener of the show, Leslie, was sharing the her representative, like a little girl was putting a Valentine under the door, and the secretary opened the door and the little girl knocked down and the secretary fell, and they like put out a press release like the secretary was being attacked and there was video, and that's clearly not what was going to happen. I mean, it sounds like one big central theme of these across the town hall is you will listen to us, like we will not be ignored. And, you know, postponing the town halls or not having people, you know, for the first month of the Trump administration ring through to busy lines and full voicemails wasn't helping the situation any.
I really appreciated talking about Tom Cotton, the way that he said, I don't care if you're a paid protester or, you know, if you're out of district or whatever, like your voices are important. You're Americans, you're Arkansans. I thought that was the way that Republicans should handle this.
Did you like when Mitch McConnell told people that the winners make policies and the losers go home?
You know, I'm just not going to say anything about Mitch right now because I don't have anything kind to say.
Oh, I mean, sometimes I think he's sly like a fox, and sometimes I think that he's just a mean person. Sometimes he says things and I'm like, how did you think that was going to land, friend? Like, I don't know.
He's had power too long. That's what that is. He's been there too long.
Yeah. Wasn't that the truth?
Awaken someone in Kentucky to rise up and challenge Mitch McConnell, please. That's what
please.
We need.
Anybody. So we do have a correction to make to our FEC coverage.
Yes, we talked about how the FEC is three Democrats, three Republicans, one Democrat stepping down. And I think that we made it sound as though President Trump could appoint a Republican in that seat. He could not. It has to be a Democrat. The issue is, what are the values of that person? And is it a person that Senate Democrats would be comfortable with? Or would he just kind of go off on his own and find someone who's more in line with his position? But the FEC does have to be balanced from a party perspective.
We are special breakfast people here at Pantsuit Politics, but not just when Beth and I are on the road. The truth is, I want something warm from the oven every Saturday morning and Sunday morning. It's just the truth. It makes it feel special, makes it feel exciting. I don't want to work at it. So the first time I ever saw Wild Grain, which is bake from frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries, I was obsessed. You guys, I've been a member for over a year. It's amazing. It's so easy. Every item bakes from frozen in 25 minutes or less, no thawing required. You can fully customize your Wild Grain box. You can choose any combination of breads, pastas, pastries. You can even build a box of only breads, only pastas, or only pastries if you'd like. And for a limited time, you can get $30 off the first box, plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/pantsuit to start your subscription. Sometimes I make one single croissant just for me because I want to feel special and they're so good. You heard me. Free croissants in every box. And $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/pantsuit. That's wildgrain.com/pantsuit. Or you can use promo code pantsuit at checkout. Looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. It's super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. And if you're giving an Aura as a gift, you can even personalize the frame with preloaded photos and memories. You guys, I love my Aura frames. I have one in my office. I have one in my kitchen. I have given one as a housewarming gift. I have given one as Mother's Day, Father's Day. They are the most amazing gifts because this app is a game changer, in my personal opinion, in digital frames. It makes it so, so easy to get the pictures on there and even videos. It plays like you're in Harry Potter, you guys. It is the best. I love mine so much. And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Can I get something off my chest? Every day I feel a little pang of sadness because I think about Griffin going away to college. Y'all, he's a freshman in high school. This is not healthy or normal. This is why I have it on my list of things to talk to my therapist about. We all carry around these things, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us. Therapy is a safe space to get these things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapist anytime for no additional charge. You gotta get it off your chest. And you can get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/pantsuit today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. .com/pantsuit.
So we also had President Trump remove the executive guidance under the Department of Education, I believe. Was it under the Department of Justice or the Department of Education that these guidelines came out? Maybe it was the Department of Justice. I don't remember. With regards to students and schools under Title IX being allowed to use the bathroom of their gender identity. Thoughts on that?
Well, first, it might be worth saying that we are recording this very, very late at night. So if you are hearing greater than usual, I can't remember, that is why. on the bathroom issue, here's what I want to say, I think. No one believes more passionately than I do that people should all go to the bathroom where they want to and be safe in doing so. So I am fully on board with that concept. I don't want to judge where anybody uses the bathroom. Personal choice, you do you. I cannot believe that we need laws to tell us that that's okay, or that anyone wants to make laws to say that it's not okay. I just feel like we've lost our minds about bathrooms. When President Obama decided that schools had to deal with this issue in a certain way, I knew that this was going to be trouble, right? And said so at the time on our podcast. And this, again, is why doing these types of things by executive order does not work, because they get undone quickly. And so my statement on this is, batter up, Congress. What are you going to do in terms of protection of transgender rights? Only through Congress can this problem get solved and be put away permanently.
Well, I disagree that only through Congress can this problem get solved, because somebody most certainly will sue and ask for an interpretation from the courts about Title IX. And that's my biggest beef with this idea of, like, well, we should just let states decide. If we let states decide, we would still have, you know, all boys schools. Virginia sued to protect the Virginia Military Institute's right to exclude women from admissions. And all kinds of states across the country defended education institutions' rights to discriminate or to follow less strict standards with regards to sexual harassment. So I know that sounds really nice to just let states decide, but the truth is states defend a lot of the time much less than strict interpretations with regard to gender discrimination under Title IX. I personally feel if I was a judge, if I was in charge, or I had a magic wand, anybody want to give me a magic wand, that'd be great. That, of course, Title IX, if Title IX just protects sex, then it protects sex identity. I mean, I don't understand how you could interpret that differently. But I mean, I do, I guess, but it bugs me. And so the idea that we'll just let the states decide, I mean, that's fine. We don't have to do it by executive order, but it most certainly will be decided by the, for the courts. Because if you think Congress is going to tee up for this one, then when they can't get big stuff done, yeesh.
The worst thing about it happening through the courts, and I don't disagree with any of the analysis that you just walked through, if it gets done that way, then I think we're going to have another Roe versus Wade situation where states are going to try to chip away at it. And the public is going to be resentful of it. I mean, can we not just agree as a society that we are finished discriminating against people on this basis? I feel like culturally we're kind of there. It's just a small minority of people who keep hammering away at this stuff. And again, I hate that we have to have laws telling us to just treat each other as human beings. I really do. But if we let's get on with it. Let's make those laws and move on. But I don't want to let the executive branch have control over who goes to the bathroom where and what kind of protection they receive in their schools. I mean, this is children. It's just, it makes me very mad that this is where we are.
Well, I think, I just read This Is How It Always Is, which is an amazing book about a transgender child. Spoiler alert, they kind of try to keep it a secret. That's what the book's about, okay? You find out pretty quickly. It's a really, really well done book, and the author's child also is transgendered, and she writes this amazing sort of author's note, and she says at the end, like, I know that this book will be controversial, but I can't for the life of me remember why. And she has this really great sentence where she talks about, I'm going to pull it up so I don't screw it up. So she says, wider ranges of normal make the world a better place for everyone. And I think that's really great. And I think that as our culture expands to a wider range of normal, it has to be from a first person experience. Like, I think you saw the advancement of LGB right now, rights, because people came out of the closet and people had to accept that people in their own family were gay, and to think how they dealt with that. And I think with transgender, it's a smaller group of people, but I think what you're going to see more and more is children, like the little boy who went to Cub Scouts when the Cub Scouts started allowing transgender kids. Like, who wants to look at that kid and be a jerk? I mean, I know people will, but I think that because particularly as children grow up transgendered and are more comfortable, and you have parents supporting their children changing gender identity or sex identity, then that will, I'm confusing the words right now. I don't know, a listener is going to email us about that, but I just think that that will sort of push it further faster. But, and I think, I hope it wouldn't be another Roe v. Wade situation, because you would know somebody, right? You're not going to be, I know that there are people that are still have problems with gay rights. But I think the reason you hear all this religious freedom is they know that it's not okay to be against gay rights anymore, that our culture has shifted because so many people know and love gay people and really just don't want to stand for it anymore and changing generational ideas. And I think that will happen with transgender. And I think the reason it's different than Roe v. Wade is, for better or for worse, and I hope this eventually changes, since it's, you know, depending on the statistics you look at, about 1 in 3 women by the age of 40 have had an abortion, but women don't share that. And I think you would see a change in the sort of the culture wars regarding abortion if more women said, hey, look, that happened to me. I had an abortion. You know me. You love me. You know I have kids now and I love them, but I just couldn't do it then. And I'm not a bad person. I think about that speech from NARAL where she said, it's not bad girls have abortions and good girls have family. It's all the same girl, just different points in her life. And I just think when our culture, when those people with different experiences come out of the shadow and we have that wider range of normal, that's where things really start to shift. And sometimes the laws are in front of that and sometimes the laws are behind that. But the idea that like laws are going to solve that is probably not great, but we have to, they have to be involved at some point. They have to be there to protect people until the culture catches up or to push the culture a little bit further. And I think that with transgendered rights in particular, you're going to see that. I mean, we've already seen it faster than I would argue even gay rights happened.
My broader point is that we are better off when we do these things through the legislative process than the judicial process. Mm-hmm. And I hope that this happening and what I hope will be the public outcry about it will push Congress to act on this point.
Oh, you're so optimistic about Congress these days. I don't know why, but
I'm not really optimistic, but I'm just becoming more determined that we're not, you know, if Congress were full of women, everybody would be saying things like, we don't send you up there to just look pretty. And that's kind of what I feel right now. Like, get something done. You know, where a lot of the problems that we have right now are because Congress has been sitting around for the last 10 years or so, really playing games that only benefit the people who are there. And I say this against the backdrop of our numerous discussions about how we have to have more grace for politicians, and I want to have that. But I also need this body to get busy and not leave us at the hands of any executive the way that they have over the past two presidents.
Well, speaking of getting busy, do we have time for a little bit of feedback?
I think that we do. So the first thing, we received a message from Elizabeth about our episode on Tuesday, where I explained part of the reason that I'm conservative is because I don't like elevating people's positions over each other. So to me, when the collective we kind of has to make a decision, we're in this position of deciding whose opinion matters more than someone else's opinion. And Elizabeth says, isn't that a cop-out? If you don't have a collective we deciding things, how or why do we have a government? Are there not a time when facts and data that say we should do X and thus we do X? Yeah, there is. I mean, that's why I'm a conservative, not a libertarian. I don't look at this as a blanket proposition, more as a guiding principle. So to me, when we can leave decisions in the hands of individuals and then communities and then states, right? And, you know, the federal government, to me, that idea of the big, broad collective we that has such a diversity of needs and interests, that should be our last resort. Now, there are times when that last resort is appropriate, lots of times. It's just that I start from the place of how do we keep decisions localized? Because at a very fundamental level, I think that people should have as much control over their own lives as possible.
You know what, though, it's almost like we can't get to that, to the leaving the decisions anywhere, because we really don't give anybody the benefit of the doubt or grace when it comes to decisions from the top down. We don't assume good intentions with the federal government, with the state government, with the local government, or with other individuals. Like, nobody's assuming good intentions right now. I was reading this really great thing about how Donald Trump, you know, Democrats want to get mad at the top percent, but what Donald Trump tapped is like the people right above the poverty line who are just pissed that they're barely getting through, but the people, they see these people daily below them that are quote unquote getting handouts. It's like, you know, we don't give that from the tiniest to the biggest with regards to other people's decision makings. It seems like as a culture, we're in a space right now where nobody gets the benefit of the doubt or any sort of assumption of good intention.
I think we also don't take any responsibility for anything. I think we act culturally as though everything is happening to us. And I mean that in terms of those of us who are very privileged. So I understand there are people who things do happen to them, right? And then a lot of things are outside of their control.
But well, the privilege is not about things happening to you. It's about how quickly you can get back up, right? You and I can get 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 chances, but somebody that doesn't gets like a half of a chance.
Exactly.
So for something bad to happen to them.
I'm articulating that just to say, please don't send me emails lecturing me on privilege, because I got it, I think. I'm always open to learning more. But like, my point is, I think a lot of us, especially those of us who are very politically engaged, still have such a fatalistic view about things. I think about all the attention on Steve Bannon today because he spoke at CPAC, and how, you know, Steve Bannon like dominated, you know, my Twitter feed for a while today and some of the headlines this evening. You know what? I am not going to treat Steve Bannon like he is some enigmatic intellectual worthy of our fascination. Like, this guy is a jerk and a bully and doesn't belong anywhere in the White House, and I'm done thinking about him. You know, I'm not going to talk about him. I'm not going to write about him. I'm not going to read about him. I don't want Steve Bannon on my radar. And only to the extent that he's influencing policy does he have to be. But I think that we all like think, oh my God, we've got to panic about Steve Bannon 24 hours a day, when doing that just gives him more power, right? And we can take that power from him. And so I think, related to your point about not giving each other grace, we also don't give ourselves much credit. The town halls are a good indicator of how much power we have as citizens. I don't think Tom Cotton, like, woke up today thinking about the world exactly the same way as he did yesterday. Now, does that mean he's going to change everything about his legislative agenda? No, but people are having an impact, and I think we've got to internalize that more and use it as inspiration.
Well, and I was been thinking a lot about sort of, I read The Undoing Project, which is about behavioral economics. I've been listening, catching up on sort of a backlog of Human Brain, which is all about the social sciences and how we're influenced and how we're irrational. And I thought, man, I can't let go of the fact that I want people to make rational decisions about politics and voting. And I need to let go of the fact that I think, or I want people to make rational decisions. You know, what's the matter with Kansas? Well, what's the matter with Kansas is what's the matter with every single one of us, which is we don't make rational decisions about anything. We're human beings. We're irrational creatures. We're animals. And and that's not to be fatalistic, because I don't think that means it's all chaos and all is lost. But I do think there is sort of a power and an ability to see things from a fresh angle when you just stop fighting. It's like, there's this thing, the guy that designed your life guy, he says it's a gravity problem, which is, it's not a problem. It's just the reality, right? Stop fighting reality. Stop thinking that, the politics of Republicans versus Democrat or a hyper-polarized age is going to just get sorted out with the right facts. Like, no. Or people make irrational choices in everything, including politics. And if you can accept that and then start thinking about what those choices are built on and what behaviors and what influences them and what emotions, then all of a sudden you have some tools to work with, as opposed to just banging your head against the wall and thinking, I'll just reason people into this.
Sarah and I have talked many times about our desire to age as gracefully as possible, and skincare is a huge piece of that. I spend a lot of time and money thinking about my skin, and I have added Ritual to my routine, which just gives me a lot of comfort. Ritual is here for us. They have created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted clinical studies, so we know it's working. They're taking the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual Hyacera is one of several Ritual products that I love. I take the daily multivitamin, I take a probiotic, and Hyacera is that once daily skincare supplement that is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. I recently met a friend for the first time in person as opposed to online, and we were discussing the fact that I am 43, and she said, I cannot believe how young you look. And I thought, thank you, Ritual, for that. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off. There's not much worse than a dry, itchy scalp. Also, when you get your hair colored and then it does not last as long as you and your stylist discussed, it could be that unfiltered, mineral-filled water is the culprit. Hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin, and about 85% of the United States uses hard water, filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered shower head comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered shower head. Dermatologists recommended this unique 3-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin. Best of all, the Canopy filtered shower head is hassle-free. Installation is a breeze, and its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement unlike any others on the market. Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered shower head purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, our listeners can use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable?
Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. And they've even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit right. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
It starts with us too, right? So our listener Lisa said on Twitter in response to our last episode, do we all love our team jerseys so much that we're going to have conflict to get past this partisanship? And my response was kind of, it depends on what we prioritize. So to your point, Sarah, that we're animals, yeah, as animals, we are, we tend to stay still, right? Like biologically, we're programmed to look to be warm and comfortable and not moving around a lot. That's what we perceive as safety. So we have to like consciously decide to make changes in the way we engage with each other. And all of those decisions are going to be against sort of our animal brain's nature. But I think that we're capable of that. Like, I think we're capable of all saying, gosh, having a community around us and having relationships with other people is ultimately more important to me than feeling vindicated in every vote I've ever made.
Well, and that's so interesting you say that because, again, I was listening to Vox today and Matt Iglesias, they were talking about these Kentucky voters and these decisions. And he said, you know, we want to say that this is an irrational voting decision, but really, is it irrational? Is it irrational to just agree with everyone you live around, to not get in an act out and drag out with your family and friends in a state where your vote is not going to make a difference because you know Hillary Clinton's going to keep your health insurance? Or is it more rational to just say, I'm going to agree with all the people I live around in a state that she's not going to win anyway and vote for Donald Trump? Right? You know what I mean? Like, there, it depends on how you define rationality as well, right? If you, and I think the problem isn't that we, you know, such a big problem. It's not that we don't engage with those around us. It's that those around us all agree, or at least we all think we do. And we're sort of self-sorting. And so that we don't get this chance to, you know, push ourselves or sort of the stakes at which we are making these emotional and rational / irrational decisions. They don't really change. And so we don't get to push ourselves in new directions. We don't have people saying in our neighborhoods, hey, I love you. I mean, I do because I live in a conservative state and I'm real liberal. But I think that's such a powerful thing to sort of to come up against those weighing competing interests of the relationship, of your personal interest. And also to recognize, like you said, like, you know, I'm making emotional political decisions too. We all think that we are so, you know, rational and making these really just logical decisions based on our interests, but that's not really true. None of us are.
Well, and I think what that effect produces, that sense of community, it produces like two distinct cohorts. So it's the people who go along with it because that makes sense to them. And then the people who totally rebel against it. It makes me think in Kentucky about people who make a big production of being Duke basketball fans just to be difficult because everyone else, you know, swears allegiance against Duke forever. So you get people, depending on your location, right? You have sort of the prevailing thought of the cohort and then the people who are totally rejecting it. And where's the middle? And that's what's happened, right? The middle has just dissolved. So the hardest thing in some ways to be right now is moderate because you don't have anybody to hang there with you on a lot of issues. This kind of gets to something that Autumn said to us. Autumn has a psychology background and wrote to us about Trump rallies and my real confusion about what Trump supporters must be thinking about his post-election rally in Florida. She says, Trump did and is doing a great job of creating an in-group and an out-group. The separation he created throughout his campaign is still continuing to perpetuate, i.e. calling anyone who is not with him fake news or a disaster. It takes away the ability of individuals who he has identified as in the in-group to think rationally. This is a huge area of study in social psychology. Well, that was a great point.
No, definitely. I agree.
And that sort of you're with him or against him dynamic is really starting to play out. And that's what we spent a lot of time talking about on Tuesday, I think. Why are people who weren't really with Trump starting to be defensive of him? Why are his approval ratings among Republicans so high? I think it's because you have sort of the resistance, and you got to be with the resistance or against the resistance. And then you've got the Trump people, and you got to be with them or against them. And nobody really wants to be in that no man's land in between. It's uncomfortable.
So I finally got our book club selection, Strangers in Their Own Land, and I highly recommend it. I just started it, and I'm going to try to finish it up. And I wanted to put in a little plug for them. If this conversation we're having right now is interesting to you, then the book our Pantsuit Politics book club on Goodreads picked will definitely interest you. And hopefully we're going to have a discussion on the podcast about the book in probably the next week or so. So you still have time. Go read Strangers in Their Own Land. It's really good.
So we have a lot more interesting feedback, but we've already doubled the length of what we try to aim for on our Friday episodes. This is becoming a pattern, Sarah, with the length of our conversations.
Yeah, and Nicholas gets mad.
With apologies to Nicholas, we will start to wrap this up. We want to thank Stephanie and Charlotte sincerely for supporting Pantsuit Politics. All of our subscribers, you are so important to us, and we feel so fortunate to have the support of our community, especially Melissa, Tracy, Tracy, Ashley, Audrey, Christine, Nicolette, Paige, Sydney, and Priya. Thank you for being our all-star subscribers. We are working on our audio diligently. We appreciate all of your messages and encouragement around that, and particularly those of you who've reached out with offers to actually go to work yourself, including Staz in Australia. It is amazing to me that someone in Australia is willing to roll up his sleeves and pitch in on this show. So thank you so much. We will be back with you on Tuesday. Until then, keep it nuanced, y'all.
Thank you to our producer, Nicholas Holland, and to our Chief Creative Officer, Dante Lima, for all the work they do to make Pantsuit Politics possible. And to all of you for making this community so special. Remember to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Pantsuit Politics, or Instagram at Pantsuit Politics. Please leave us your feedback and send us your ideas for show topics and Pantsuit Primers on social media, or you can email us at sarah@pantsuitpoliticsshow.com or beth@pantsuitpoliticsshow.com.